Chapter 85. I was very sorrowful to think that Charlie's pretty looks would change and be disfigured. Even if she recovered, she was such a child with her dimpled face, but that thought was, for the greater part, lost in her greater peril. When she was at the worst, and her mind rambled again to the cares of her father's sickbed and the little children, she still knew me so far as that she would be quiet in my arms, when she could lie quiet nowhere else, and murmur out the wanderings of her mind less restlessly. At those times I used to think, how should I ever tell the two remaining babies, that the baby who had learned of her faithful heart, to be a mother to them in their need was dead. There were other times, when Charlie knew me well, and talked to me, telling me that she sent her love to Tom and Emma, and that she was sure Tom would grow up to be a good man. At those times Charlie would speak to me, of what she had read to her father as well as she could to comfort him, of that young man carried out to be buried who was the only son of his mother, and she was a widow, of the ruler's daughter raised up by the gracious hand upon her bed of death. And Charlie told me that, when her father died she had kneeled down, and prayed in her first sorrow, that he likewise, might be raised up and given back to his poor children, and that if she should never get better, and should die too, she thought it likely, that it might come into Tom's mind to offer the same prayer for her. Then would I show Tom, how these people of old days, had been brought back to life on earth, only that we might know our hope, to be restored to heaven. But of all the various times there were in Charlie's illness, there was not one when she lost the gentle qualities I have spoken of. And there were many, many, when I thought in the night of the last high belief in the watching angel, and the last higher trust in God, on the part of her poor despised father. And Charlie did not die. She flutteringly and slowly turned the dangerous point, after long lingering there, and then began to mend. The hope that never had been given, from the first, of Charlie being an outward appearance Charlie anymore soon began to be encouraged. And even that prospered, and I saw her growing into her old childish likeness again. It was a great morning when I could tell Ada all this as she stood out in the garden. And it was a great evening, when Charlie and I at last, took tea together in the next room. But on that same evening, I felt that I was stricken cold. Happily for both of us, it was not until Charlie was safe in bed again and placidly asleep, that I began to think the contagion of her illness was upon me. I had been able easily, to hide what I felt at tea time, but I was past that already now, and I knew, that I was rapidly following in Charlie's steps. I was well enough, however, to be up early in the morning, and to return my darling's cheerful blessing from the garden, and to talk with her, as long as usual. But I was not free from an impression, that I had been walking about the two rooms in the night, a little beside myself, though knowing where I was, and I felt confused at times with a curious sense of fullness, as if I were becoming too large altogether. In the evening I was so much worse, that I resolved to prepare Charlie, with which view I said, "You're getting quite strong, Charlie, are you not?" "Oh, quite," said Charlie. "Strong enough to be told a secret, I think, Charlie?" "Quite strong enough for that, miss," cried Charlie. But Charlie's face fell in the height of her delight, for she saw the secret in my face, and she came out of the great chair, and fell upon my bosom, and said, "Oh, miss, it's my doing. It's my doing." And a great deal more out of the fullness of her grateful heart. "Now, Charlie," said I after letting her go on for a little while, "if I am to be ill, my great trust, humanly speaking, is in you. And unless you are as quiet and composed for me as you always were for yourself, you can never fulfill it, Charlie." "If you'll let me cry a little longer, miss," said Charlie. "Oh, my dear, if you'll only let me cry a little longer." "Oh, my dear," how affectionately and devotedly she poured this out as she clung to my neck, "I never can remember without tears, I'll be good." So I let Charlie cry a little longer, and it did us both good. "Trust in me now, if you please, miss," said Charlie quietly. I am listening to everything you say. It's very little at present, Charlie. I shall tell your doctor tonight that I don't think I am well, and that you are going to nurse me. For that the poor child thanked me with her whole heart. And in the morning, when you hear Miss Ada in the garden, if I should not be quite able to go to the window curtain as usual, do you go, Charlie, and say I am asleep, that I have rather tired myself, and am asleep. At all times, keep the room as I have kept it, Charlie, and let no one come. Charlie promised, and I lay down, for I was very heavy. I saw the doctor that night and asked the favor of him that I wished to ask relative to his saying nothing of my illness in the house as yet. I have a very indistinct remembrance of that night melting into day, and of day melting into night again, but I was just able on the first morning to get to the window and speak to my darling. On the second morning I heard her dear voice, oh, how dear now, outside. And I asked Charlie, with some difficulty, speech being painful to me, to go and say I was asleep. I heard her answer softly, don't disturb her, Charlie, for the world. How does my own pride look, Charlie? I inquired. Disappointed, miss, said Charlie, peeping through the curtain. But I know she is very beautiful this morning. She is indeed, miss, answered Charlie, peeping. Still looking up at the window. With her blue clear eyes, God bless them, always loveliest when raised like that. I called Charlie to me, and gave her last charge. Now, Charlie, when she knows I am ill, she will try to make her way into the room. Keep her out, Charlie, if you love me truly, to the last. Charlie, if you let her in but once, only to look upon me for one moment as I lie here, I shall die. I never will. I never will. She promised me. I believe it, my dear Charlie. And now come and sit beside me for a little while, and touch me with your hand. For I cannot see you, Charlie, I am blind. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.